The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. And for the third consecutive day, I welcome Dave Zanotti from the Public Square, the American Policy Roundtable. Dave Zanotti, welcome to my program today. So great to have you on again, my man.
Mike, it's always fun to be on my wife's favorite radio show.
Well, thank you. You say that often, and it blesses me every time, and tell her I said thank you. And, you know, Dave, I think you, myself, most Americans are probably yawning a little bit about this time right now, realizing that we are recording this shortly after 8:30 in the morning, and the night before for you, did you get any sleep at all?
Well, there was a few hours where my eyes were closed, but we didn't get much rest. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But we were preparing for this situation, knowing that it would be a few days, and we've got a team of folks that are taking care of one another here, doing 20-hour shifts at iVoters and trying to stay on top of all of this. So we're okay. This is what we're here for.
Well, iVoters.com has been just legendary in this entire process, leading up to it especially, offering all the helps that iVoters would have done. And I don't know how many hits your website took, but it had to be a whole bunch. And of course, your work on the public square is also, in my mind, legendary too, because of the just the knowledge that's in that group of people that sits around that table. And, you know, the things that you and I talked about yesterday on the program really did come to bear last night. I remember one of the things you said yesterday, that it would be a telling sign if we start hearing the talk about lawyers lining up. And boy, did they ever, was that talk ever there last night?
Yeah, we kind of had a laugh out loud moment on last night on our national radio coverage, because we were sort of, it was kind of like Tony Romo calling the Super Bowl. There are times when he literally calls the next three plays. And
yeah,
you go, that's just crazy. He's really good at that. We've been seeing this coming now for months. It goes the whole way back to March, Mike. Mm-hmm. We could tell that when we had governors making very, very edgy and dicey decisions about elections, mm-hmm, way back in March in the primaries based on COVID, that they would have ramifications in November on process. Now, please understand, we're not talking about intent here. We haven't gotten to questions of intent on this election, and we won't for a good number of days. Just the simple processing of votes in ways they've come that they haven't come before, without financial appropriations, time for hiring and training and practice, is a challenge, because elections are strange beings. They surge every 4 years. For 2 weeks, they're the most important thing in the world, and then they go away. You can't run a company that way. That's why it's a nonprofit endeavor. That's why it's a come and go, and it's a civic duty. Well, when you put extreme pressure on a system, excuse me, that is that voluntary, mm-hmm, and that temporary, and you put extreme pressure on it without help, you're going to have things that get really messy. And that's what we've got. Now, this is not intention. This is process. So it's going to take time to iron all this out. Then we'll have to look and see if anybody actually attempted to exploit the weaknesses, because I wouldn't blame them, knowing human nature as it is. If a person had a nefarious intention in this election, no matter who they were for or what race, anywhere, mm-hmm, there were holes that could have been exploited. So it's going to take a while to figure out what's really going on here.
Well, the thing that I guess surprises me the most about what I've heard and what we've all learned now about things such as the situation out in Texas, where they were basically coming up with all of these additional drop-off places for early voting that were not passed legally. And some of them were put in precincts that would have been heavily Democratic. And without any sense of poll watchers or any sense of official eyes on those places, one of the things that was very clear that we talked about was that was against election law. That was against the ordinances that are already set up to govern such things. It seems to be, you used the word nefarious, it does seem to be completely reckless that some of these leaders in these cities did what they did. And then, Dave, that, and then if you could comment on the AG in Pennsylvania making an already, before the election night was even closed from the standpoint of voting, already making a statement that said, we already know the outcome. What does that mean? How does he do that?
It's really ironic how much politics captured the moment in Pennsylvania. And as we speak now, it's interesting because as we speak, and we're not sure yet on a number of things, but it could very well be that Donald Trump would win Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
He has a significant lead there, and there's not a tremendous amount of votes left. And depending on where you're getting your information from, that's the difficult thing as well. We found out last night that Karl Rove is actually watching the New York Times. That's his primary vote count mechanism. Well, everybody thought he had a lot more magic behind him than that, because anybody can watch what Karl Rove was watching. And that's also what's really helpful, is that you can be your own decision desk on this, and hopefully you don't have to be. We try to help on that. But the data is available from all 50 states, Secretary of State's office. It's available in the light of day. We have a team that's monitoring and watching all of it. Now, Donald Trump may very well win Pennsylvania in spite of highly partisan statements made by the mayor of Philadelphia, the attorney general, the lieutenant governor, and others in Pennsylvania that are not of the same party or persuasion as Donald Trump. Those kinds of statements don't belong in the process, but they were made, but they're just words at this stage in the game.
Mm-hmm.
What's important is the process has to be completed, and then we have to look and see. We'll worry about fixing it in a few days, because obviously there's those questions for the people of Pennsylvania to decide. But right now we've got to make sure we know what happened and that everything is done accurately. Now, what's ironic about this election, Mike, from a historical perspective, is it's possible that the person that won Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania would lose the presidency. And that is unprecedented.
That is for sure.
And then even more ironic is that the person who wins the state of Michigan in the United States Senate seat, John James, mm-hmm. as a Republican, would win that election at the same time that Donald Trump loses Michigan.
Mm.
There's anomalies that are popping up that are just fascinating that we've got to watch and look at and see what they mean. So there's a lot that's got to be parsed out of this thing yet. Here's the word for all Americans that comes to us from our Constitution and our Declaration. America is not defined by who the president is. It never has been, and it never will be. The media loves to do that to us because that's how they make boatloads of money every 4 years. But America does not operate every given day based upon what's happening in the White House. It operates based on what's happening in the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're seeing is that process has been vibrant. That process looks like it may not have moved a whit. It looks like the House will still be controlled by the Democrat Party, and that the Senate will still be controlled, and perhaps by exactly the same numbers, by the Republicans. So Americans are protecting themselves in a very big fight. They're protecting themselves by divided government. The voters know there's a battle going on regarding worldview and what kind of nation we're going to be. And right now, I feel like the voters are protecting the country, in essence, by ticket splitting all across and by separation of powers.
Mm-hmm. You know, this thing that we heard a lot during the Obama presidency, and it was there before, but I don't think it ever got the news that it got under him, and that was the executive orders. The role of the president does in this day and age, and I'd like your thoughts, is this a new weight that's played on executive orders in this day and age? Because whoever owns the presidency, who's in that seat, has that ability to make an executive order that does seem to bypass all legislative attempts or efforts or needs, and just make something that is by an executive order, and it feels like the law to a lot of people. Is that something that you're seeing a recent trend?
Wow. We just had an hour seminar in about a paragraph. Let's just say that the answer to your question is yes, and it's a tragedy no matter who the president is. Donald Trump is just as wrong for attempting to govern by executive order as Barack Obama was, and saying that the Congress is deadlocked, so I have no choice, is an illegal, unconstitutional, and unethical point of view. I don't care who the president is. The president does not govern this nation. The president is involved as the executive branch with executing the laws that the governing agency, which is the Congress, passes.
Mm-hmm.
That is fundamental constitutional law 101 in civics from the eighth grade. And there is no excuse for attempting to govern by executive order. You just can't do it, Mike. It's not right. And it never works. It never holds, because eventually a new president comes along and wipes it out. And
yep.
That kind of back and forth and back and forth is what drives people crazy.
It does. And you're right. It is. It has no firm foundation. It reminds me of the scripture that you're building your house on sand if all you're doing is making an order that 4 years later could be completely up and reversed. And that's
Let's go there. That's one of my favorite passages in the Sermon on the Mount, is Jesus' summation. Upon what worldview will you base your mm-hmm. reality? And if you base your reality on his teachings, and it's interesting, Mike, because look at the Sermon on the Mount. I wouldn't suggest anyone do this, but you could actually attempt to live the Sermon on the Mount, even if you chose not to believe the author, and profit and merit greatly in your life. Jesus' teachings are so true that even if you follow them without abiding in him, you benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Because truth is truth. It's true truth.
Mm-hmm.
And what Jesus is saying there is, if you build your worldview and your life on a foundation of sand, not upon his teachings and him, then when the pressure comes, you get washed away.
Mm-hmm.
The pressure now is on America. The believers in America should not be washed away, because this pressure was coming. We predicted this for the better part of all year. Since March, we've been saying this is coming in regards to this election. And the battle that's underneath the process battle is going to be with us for the rest of this generation. Mike, there is a battle over the nature of what it will be to be an American and what our system of government will look like. That is a fair fight. We're allowed to have that fight. One way we have that fight, that conversation, that debate, and it's a fight, all right? They can't put a pretty face on this, whether we're going to be a socialistic nation, whether we're going to be a constitutional republic based on biblical principles,
mm-hmm.
whether we're going to be a theistic or a nation based on the Declaration, or whether we're going to be an atheistic, all right, purely material philosophy and underpinning. Those are fair questions. It's a fair fight. We have the consent of the governed. It's okay. That's the battle we have to have. But as life and death as that is, the author of life is still the author of life.
Yes.
And we don't vote him ever
mm-hmm.
out of the position of being the final reality.
That is
Lord.
He is Lord. He's sovereign. He's over all. And there are never greater times than like these right now, when we need that reminder. We need to tell that to each other. I think it's so easy for Christians to get their eyes on the polls, get their eyes on the news or the returns in this situation, and only see that without remembering the fact that God could be doing something, and without a doubt is doing something, that we don't see, that we don't understand, that we can't discern, and that thing is going to prevail because he is God and he is Lord. And boy,
Mike, I know we're running out of time. Can I give you one extremely candid comment this morning?
Absolutely. Go for it. We got about a minute left.
All right. If Donald Trump had won this election by a landslide, people would say, everything's all okay, if they were conservative, so to speak. That would be a tragedy to say, everything is okay because the president is elected. That is not the answer. The battle that is raging in this country goes way beyond who the next president is.
Mm-hmm.
The battle that's going on in this country is a question over true truth. And what are we going to do? What foundation will we build upon, the rock or the sand?
Mm.
That is the fundamental battle that begins in our hearts, in our homes, in our communities, and then into our nation.
And we keep getting this sense, don't we, that the sand is being forced upon us. We're having to fight against that battle almost every day in increasing measures. Dave Zanotti, thank you so much for being with me. This is 3 days in a row, and I'm kind of getting used to this, my man.
Well, Mike, I am too, and it's my privilege to be with you. I count you as a friend, and thank you for your wonderful professional approach to all of this. I appreciate your program.
Well, thank you, Dave. And friends, we'll be back in a moment with Jimmy Patronis from the state of Florida. He's the CFO. That comes up in just a moment right here on Afternoons with Mike. On the line with me is Jimmy Patronis. I've not ever had the chance to meet Jimmy face-to-face, but boy, it is great to have you on the line today. And thank you for serving our country the way you do in the state of Florida as the CFO. And your background, and let's just jump in there and talk a little bit about that, because not everybody can say that their mother was born in the same area on the Isle of Patmos where so much happened in the Bible. Tell us a little bit about that. And first of all, welcome to my program.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Yeah, so mom and both of my grandmothers were raised on the island of Patmos. It's funny, my mother, she was there till age 11. And the island of Patmos, of course, where John wrote the book of Revelation, the cave of the apocalypse is there. At top of is the monastery, which a few years ago celebrated its 900th anniversary. And there's 365 churches on this very arid little island in the Aegean Sea, and there's a church there for every day of the week because it was always fearful through persecution that they would need somewhere to go and practice Christianity because of the threat of, you know, other countries that would come in that would seize power over Greece.
Mm-hmm. And that area is, what kind of a political sphere is still remaining there right now?
Greece is still, there's really not much of separation of church and state. The church is incredibly powerful. It is very visible throughout Greece. But it also has a very positive influence for good in at all levels of society and government. Still have the patriarchy is based there in Constantinople and Istanbul. And it's been a little bit of tumultuous as the prime minister of Turkey is now basically saying Hagia Sophia is now going to be, you know, a full-time mosque. And here, at least the center of where the Greek Orthodox faith, you know, calls their home is under threat now because of what's happening with the administration in Turkey now. So bumpy times. But it's been nice. President Trump and also Vice President Pence have been advocates for, letting, Christianity still, be able to prosper and grow and be administered out of Turkey. So there's definitely been some diplomatic fights. But at the same time, there's a lot going on in the world right now. We should appreciate the president's leadership.
I do, too. And I'm thankful for that. And how in the world, I got to ask this question. How did a guy like yourself, whose mom came from that area, how did you end up in Florida?
So my dad, my great, great grandfather, he had three brothers. Two of them settled in Tallahassee, Florida. The other two settled in Lima, Peru. Still have cousins down there. We met with them a few years ago. A lot of Greeks settled. There's a large Greek community in Daytona Beach. There's a large one in Tallahassee. There's a large one in Tarpon Springs. And the Greeks would follow the Greeks. So in Tallahassee, there's actually a lot of Greeks from the island of Patmos. If you go down to Tarpon Springs, a lot of Greeks from the island of Kalymnos. So as those different Greeks would move and they would follow family members, cousins, friends, they would go and they would migrate over. So, my grandmothers went to elementary school together, and they always corresponded. And you might as well say my mom and dad met through a set-up date. So anyway, and they were going on 62 years. This year is their wedding anniversary. But daddy passed away in January. And anyway, still tough on mom. But anyway, it was wonderful. I got to be raised in the same household with my grandparents my whole adult life. And anyway, very fortunate to have that type of influence.
Well, that's quite a family background, and thank you for sharing all of that with us. We are recording this today on the day that's actually Election Day, to be replayed the day after. So we don't have the advantage of knowing the outcome of the things, the hours that are yet to happen tonight, tonight being election night. And Jimmy, you serve in politics. Now, you've been involved in many different ways, both as an elected official, and now you're in an appointment that, if I have my facts correct, you were appointed by then-Governor Rick Scott to be the CFO for the state of Florida. Do I have that right?
Right. So I was appointed to fulfill the rest of an 18-month term, and then in 2018 was very fortunate to earn the trust of citizens of the state of Florida and was elected in 2018 to a 4-year term, along with Ron DeSantis and Ashley Moody and Nikki Fried. And we get to serve together as Florida's cabinet, unique Florida's cabinet, the way it's structured. There's not another operational cabinet like this anywhere in the United States, where we still have cabinet agencies that report to this body. That you know, oversees, you know, law enforcement, state lands, veterans affairs. We have a number of shared responsibilities at the Florida cabinet in addition to clemency, and it's just it's a unique way, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's good stuff.
Tell us about the role that you play as CFO.
I tell people affectionately, I'm the state's business manager. I keep the trains running on time. I pay every bill. I balance our checkbook every single night. I'm the trustee of one of the trustees over the state's retirement fund. I'm also part of the administration of any debt that the state decides to secure in order to, you know, buy right-of-ways to expand roads or to, you know, extend out bonds in order to buy state lands. You know, there's a lot of great things that I get to play a role in. In addition to regulating insurance, serving as the chief law enforcement officer over any type of insurance fraud in the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be the state fire marshal, which is one of the jobs that my kids think is the coolest. I've got two little boys that are age 10 and 12, and there's probably not a fire station in the state of Florida that we haven't seen over the last 3 years. But it's one of the more exciting parts of the job.
Now, was that part always involved in this position, or is that something that kind of merged into there under your term?
Sure. So, it's always been part historically around the states. The state treasurer also carries the role of insurance and also fire marshal, because all those three items kind of blend together when it comes to setting insurance rates. So the state treasurer, fire marshal, and you know, insurance commissioner, they would all be kind of tied together because of, again, the rate setting of insurance, setting standards of building codes, all those going together in order to ensure the insurance market was a right fit for the citizens of the state that we're in.
If you just tuned in, I'm talking to Jimmy Patronis, and Jimmy is obviously very involved in the government of Florida in Tallahassee, and the CFO is the title, and was appointed to fill out a term, and then was elected to your own term, but that's not your first elected office. Tell us about that one.
Sure. So in 2006, was elected to the Florida House of Representatives. Served 8 years in the Florida House representing Northwest Florida. You know, it's pretty easy when you're in other parts of the United States. and you hear my dialect, people say, well, where are you from? And I said, oh, well, you know, I have fun with them. I say, I'm from L.A.
I'm from the Bronx.
You know, and then you tell them I'm from Lower Alabama, you know, because the panhandle is different. And Florida is not one state. It's about five different countries, very diverse.
Yes, yes.
And the challenges that we've got is when you pass a law in Tallahassee, it's got to inoculate the whole entire state of Florida. So sometimes, you know, it's 99% of the bills we will pass, they'll get a unanimous vote. But you do have those issues that become really line in the sands type issues where they become very partisan. But, you know, Republicans are very good about toeing the line on good, solid conservative value issues. And I'm proud to be part of a legislature that did a lot of good on behalf of building stronger families, empowering small business to be able to grow. And the best thing is, I think our only charge constitutionally is to set a budget. We made sure that we did everything possible to keep as much money in people's pockets and not send it through Tallahassee in order to be filtered, you know.
Well, from what I can tell, the reputation that Florida has, and especially in the areas that you oversee, it's a very good reputation. It's one that I don't believe it was always as strong as it is right now, but you guys have obviously a good sense of teamwork going on. Even in your description of the cabinet with the people that you serve alongside, this is something that's got to make going to work for you a little bit of fun every day.
Well, it's funny. I was just talking to some friends of mine. My favorite day of the whole year is April Fool's Day, and I feel like it's important that the people that you're working with, you can have a good laugh with. But at the same time, I spent 30 years of my life in the family restaurant business, and so I'm hardwired to always be in the mode of taking care of the customer. And whether that customer was somebody at my family's restaurant or it's a constituent, I love to be a problem solver, and we deal with people every day that maybe they're upset with their local government, maybe they're upset with their federal government or state government. And my attitude is, you know what, whatever level of government you're mad at, just tell me, let me help you solve your problems, because at the end of the day, you're working hard to take care of your family, maybe show up to work or operate a business. And, you go out and elect people to try to run your state for you, run your business regulation. And my attitude is not to argue with you. Just let's get you an answer so you can be focused on taking care of your family or your business.
Would that kind of real heart to serve, would that be widespread from your experience in Tallahassee?
You know, the Florida legislature is, it is a true cross, hatch of everything we have in the state. You have school teachers, you have retirees, you have engineers, you have dentists, you have people that have just started off in life. Maybe they're just a brand new attorney or brand new accountant. And you build that melting pot of personalities, professions, experiences in place. Not everybody grew up in the restaurant business where you're in a mode of taking care of the customer and trying to ensure the customer's always right. So you put all that type of blending of personalities together. It's a good fit. It's a good fit. And the nice thing about it is the way the Florida legislature is structured, they meet once a year for 60 days. And you know what? And they go back home and they listen to the frustrations, concerns, ideas of their constituents and take it back to Tallahassee and continue to always make sure government is serving the people of the state of Florida, not to try to serve itself.
That's wonderful. Tell me just a little bit about what it's like working with our governor, who also himself has quite a nice reputation. If anybody watches Fox News, he's a regular on there. They are drawing from him. And again, the reputation as to how Florida has been managed through the COVID crisis, it's pretty legendary. What's it like working for him?
So Ron's the governor. He's a great guy, incredibly smart. To me, I think his secret weapon is Casey, the first lady. Not only is she's just charming, warm, outgoing, friendly, but she's also a mom of three little ones under the age of five.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot. And as for anybody who's a young couple out there and how enjoyable those young years can be in child development, but also how many new life experiences that parents learn trying to raise children that young age. So you take all those requirements that they're dealing with right now in life, and oh, by the way, you throw a pandemic on his lap.
Yes.
You know, he's dealing with an extraordinary amount of stress, you know, challenges, and there's not on the shelf a pandemic playbook that you pick up and it tells you how to run your state during the middle of a pandemic. It's been challenging times, but considering what he has had to endure, I think he has led in a way that we all should be proud of.
Oh, I think he has done a great job, and I'm grateful that our state, the state that I am privileged to live in, this wonderful area called Florida, I'm so grateful that we are not like some of the other states that are highly restricted, that are highly governed in a way that seems to be overreach at times. I'm just thankful that we've had a governor that stood up to the pressure and has said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this. And that's the kind of leadership that I think the citizens of Florida are really, really grateful for. So thank you for being a part of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and look, I think there's, you know, we're going to be advocating this year for some COVID liability protections, because we've got businesses, we've got churches, we've got non-for-profits, we've got hospitals that are all trying to get back to normal. They're going above and beyond CDC guidelines, Department of Health guidelines, to ensure we're doing right by our employees, our patrons, our volunteers. And I think the governor has been very sensitive to that. And you can't have it both ways. You can't go out and have a peaceful protest with, you know, 2,000-3,000 people, you know, observing no Department of Health guidelines, but then you're not, you know, you're restricting people's ability to worship together at a church service. So, you know,
not even sing.
Yeah. You know, so it's that's what, you know, Governor Newsom out in California, he's always said Thanksgiving has basically been canceled in California. You know, no gatherings of six or more, must be outside. To your point, no singing. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, who do you think you are? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, can we, you know, by government rule, destroy the family unit? And that's, it seems like what he's trying to accomplish. It's depressing and sad. And that's why people are leaving California. That's why they're leaving New York. That's why they're leaving Illinois and New Jersey. You know, these really oppressive government environments have just, you know, pushed people to the point where enough's enough.
Well, I tell you what, there's a lot of people that have found Florida to be a great answer as they are moving. And I'm hearing about people who are moving from California, that they're stopping in farther states, farther in toward the middle.
Sure.
And I'm just so grateful again to be here and grateful for all that's happened. Now, again, as we are talking in this moment, this is being recorded on Election Day on Tuesday afternoon. And to be exact, I just want to make very clear that we do not know, obviously, the outcome of what's going to happen in this election, whether it's going to even have been called by now. Many are saying that it may not be. I would love to know, and this is kind of a, it's kind of a unique way of asking this question because of the fact that we are now recording this a day before anyone is hearing this. Tell me what it has been like for you and the other appointed and elected officials working in Tallahassee, your role being the CFO, the chief financial officer for the state and on the cabinet. What has it been like to watch and observe the state of Florida during this most unusual of election cycles?
You know, it's been a challenge, because when we saw the last presidential cycle, the type of enthusiasm that President Trump had created without any of the mainstream media necessarily being an advocate or cheerleader for him. Mm-hmm. And then you fast forward, you know, 4 years later, it's been difficult, because as we've had threats of COVID that have, you know, limited gathering, limited the ability to try to, you know, engage. I tell people, election season is similar to football season, basketball season, you name it. You know, there are fans for football, college basketball, baseball, hockey. There's fans for political season, too. So you've got individuals who they're rabid about campaigning, sign waving, knocking doors, you name it. And then they've been all kind of been held at bay or have had to try to figure out a new way how to get engaged in the election cycle. But, you know, Sunday night I was down in Doral, Florida to be there at the rally. And myself and Governor Sanders and Senator Scott, Senator Rubio, and, you know, Pam Bondi, we were all up on stage at one time or another, you know, kind of firing up the crowd. And, you know, really from 6 o'clock in the evening till 2 o'clock in the morning, there's 15,000 people standing on their feet, no chairs, to hear our president speak. And that type of enthusiasm and, you know, just following, you know, his leadership, it's humbling. He is not fighting for Washington. He is fighting for the individuals of the United States of America.
The crowds are kind of unprecedented, really, when you look at it, and not knowing what it's going to be like for tomorrow, which is today. It's kind of odd to be doing this. I keep having conflicts going on in my brain. It's enough to having to deal with the return to Eastern Standard Time, much less recording something a day on a day like today. But, you know, when we look and when you compare the uniqueness of the rallies that President Trump has been able to pull off, not just one or two of them, but literally every one of them, some of them multiple thousands, tens of thousands. I think one of them I heard was 27,000 people had come out, and maybe even more. But, you know, this is kind of an unprecedented response, and it really is going to be interesting to see how that really shakes out in terms of votes, in terms of outcome, and what it means to do. But there is one thing for sure. What you said earlier, there is a lot of enthusiasm. There's a lot of passion for those that are supporters of this president with absolutely no help at all from the news media.
None. And he has, I think it's okay for a leader to evolve in their way of thinking. And, you know, one thing I've appreciated about this president, I think his fight for, you know, conservative values, I think he has realized more and more. Look, there's anybody that enters into public life, whether it be myself or your Governor Scott, people that have never been in politics have gone into it. I think it's no different. You realize how much responsibility you have taken on in order to lead a group, fight for their values, fight for their beliefs, and then that level of responsibility sinks in, and then you become even more, in my opinion, committed to making that fight known because of those people that, you know, see you as a champion for what's important to them and how it becomes more and more important to you. And I look at, you know, from what President Trump has done in his judicial picks, I think those are all, you know, good, solid picks he's put on, whether it be the federal court or U.S. Supreme Court. And those are going to be picks that will affect a generation full of decisions to ensure that activist judges do not, you know, harm and interpret laws being passed differently than what a member of Congress or a legislature had passed.
You know, Jimmy, you have a unique perspective that I think a lot of the citizens of Florida, we would wonder, I think a lot of curious minds that are thinking about what kind of atmosphere there must be, what kind of cooler talk there would be in the state house when we see states and we see the Democratic Party in particular going as far left and progressive as being out and out calling themselves socialists and Marxism being embraced by many, many of these leaders. What kind of impact does that bring to those that are elected officials on the other side of the aisle that would hold near and dear to what this country's values has been for many years?
There's nothing wrong with having a civilized debate on policies. I think that's healthy. I think it's healthy to have this melting pot of ideas. But I'm also quick to point out Sometimes you also have to realize elections have consequences. And as we have seen, you know, President Trump has been pretty firm about, you know, advocating. If we look at an international trade deal, you know, there's been criticism as he blew up the Iran deal. And he has received a lot of criticism from Democrats and Obama administrative folks about it. Meanwhile, it wasn't long ago, I was in Israel. I met with Prime Minister Netanyahu, and you hear about how there has been more togetherness in the Middle East since the dissolving of that Iran deal, simply because so many of those Middle Eastern countries have now come together because there's a common threat in Iran. And so, you know, again, I think elections have consequences. Sometimes we can work together. Sometimes we need to hit the reset button and go back to check it out. And because this president was not part of a political long-term established candidacy like a Joe Biden at 47 years, he can be a little bit more open thinking because he can be. He wasn't, you know, bred in that environment for 47 years, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I think
I
even
go
for
on and on about that opportunity he's given us, you know.
I think even for you, you bring to what you do now in Tallahassee, it's on the shoulders of not a lifetime in political parties, but in a lifetime of serving in a family business. Tell us about that.
Oh, I tell you, it's been the pleasure of a lifetime to be able to work in the same business with my dad and uncle and my brothers. And, you know, up until I took this job, my brothers still do it. They clock in and clock out every day. I did the same thing while I was there. And the attitude always was, is if you want a paycheck, you're in the business taking care of the customers. Or you're in the business taking care of the employees or ensuring the food is good and taking care of. So we've been at it, you know, 53 years.
Mm-hmm.
We've got 200-plus employees. The average length of employment is over 25 years. We take care of our people because they take care of our customers. And it's just been a great way to grow up. You know, it probably influenced my desire to be a public servant. My dad and uncle came from nothing, and now they have been blessed with a successful business. I think it's important to give back. I think everybody should find some role in life to be able to be a public servant, whether it be to help out your community or, you know, you may fall into the lucky bucket and end up CFO of the state of Florida.
Well, I tell you what, the COVID mess sure messed up a lot of restaurants, a lot of other businesses. What kind of impact did COVID bring to your family business?
So, I mean, you know, it's kind of one of those things. You got to make hay while the sun is shining. So we definitely exploited, you know, to-go orders. It's something that people were stuck at home. So We had a kitchen that was operational, and we had to do what we had to do to keep our employees, you know, on the payroll and take care of them and pay bills. Mm. So, I mean, you become flexible, and, you know, not everybody has got that type of flexibility. I mean, there was definitely certain businesses out there. I mean, my gosh, if you go drive down I-Drive, it's like a zombie apocalypse. You know, there's no convention business. The hotels are empty. The restaurants are empty. And there's definitely parts of the state that are so dependent on tourism. And you think about it, when somebody's not staying in a hotel, they're not eating at the restaurants, they're not renting rental cars, they're not buying from the stores, all that has a ripple effect on the state's ability to generate sales tax and provide services. So, you know, I give it to Governor DeSantis. He has done everything he can to safely get the state back opened up, because as the economy's going, people are collecting a paycheck and they're keeping their family taken care of, they're paying their bills. You know, we're all in this together.
That's wonderful to hear that you guys were able to make it through. And with the phase three reopening now about, a month or so, maybe 3 weeks or so in effect, is the restaurant seeing people come back into the dining room?
Oh, yeah. We had an amazing summer. And what really helped is that the market up here, Northwest Florida, would compete with number one and two with Orlando and Northwest Florida, the number one drive-to destination in the state of Florida. So what you end up happening is families loaded up in their cars and they would drive down to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
So the hotels, vacation rentals. They all were pretty full because, you know, there was definitely concerns of airplane travel. You throw into the mix of it, people were worried about cash flow. So, you know, sometimes it's easier to throw a family of four in a car and drive 4 hours than go buy, you know, four plane tickets. Not certain what, you know, the economic situation may be with their job or their employment because of what COVID could have done. So the upside, you know, Congress did pass the CARES Act. They did pass out unemployment benefits. They passed out PPP loans. Those bridge solutions really saved a lot of businesses. But what did not happen in that same period is credit card debt did not increase. Families were focused on knowing that there's uncertainty, and they were living within their means, and they didn't max out their credit cards, and they did not become a credit card debt threatening them. So mm-hmm. there was some personal responsibility that came out of COVID that surprised a lot of people. Thank goodness.
And that might actually be a time that will help the future, too, because you can establish some pretty good habits in a moment like that when you don't really have the opportunity to go into debt, when there's not that. I think a lot of people look at the confidence that their job is going to bring them to be able to make those monthly payments. And when there's a good chance that they are not going to have that as a guarantee, that might have precluded them from making some of those purchases, like you said, and stay clear, stay green, stay in the black. And boy, that's great. I'm so happy to know that your restaurant, your family business is going great. What do you see for your future, Jimmy? I'm talking again, folks, you know, if you just tuned in, this is Jimmy Patronis, the CFO for the state of Florida.
So, you know, who knows? I'm sorry. I'm multitasking. I told her I was a voice today. You know, one thing that I'm a big believer in is, you know, God put me on an incredible relationship with my wife, Katie. Katie's gonna get emotional. We've been tested a number of ways, and she has been my partner, and I'm so fortunate. We've got two little boys together, and I, you know, when Governor Scott then called me and asked me if I wanted to be CFO, you know, my first call was to Katie and asked her if it was okay, and she said it was. And then the next commitment I made is I was going to give my little guys the experience of a lifetime, and we on those, you know, 18 months of campaigning, 90,000 miles that we drove around this incredible, beautiful state. You know, it was either one or both of them was with me at all times because I wanted them to realize how amazing of a place we live. Mm. And, you know, it was, to them, it was like camping out. But it was a lot of fun. And, you know, if you haven't taken the time to go see our state parks in the state of Florida, we got the most amazing state parks. Most of them have cabins. Most people don't realize that. We've just got so many great hidden secrets in this state. It's really, there's a lot of vacationing that could be done right here in the state of Florida, and we don't even know it.
Without a doubt, and having been a boater when I lived down here the first time and getting to travel up and down the St. John's River, there are so many parts of Florida that, like you said, are almost like hidden secrets that are just great secrets. And that's the part of Florida that just never changes. It's always beautiful.
Well, it's funny you say that. I mean, I travel around the state. You know, I think I've drank, you know, water out of a tap in all 67 counties. And I can tell you, you know, there's parts of the state that have really good water. There's parts of the state that I don't know if I'd poured into my garden. So, you know, but it's such a diverse place, you know, and the hospitality is so different in so many different parts of the state. But every place has a certain unique warmth and charm to it, or excitement and energy. You know, and last week we drove from Panama City all the way to Key West, just making meetings, doing some campaigning, blended in work. And, you know, it's such a great place. You couldn't pay me to live anywhere else.
You know, my first trip to Florida was when I was in third grade. I was raised in Evansville, Indiana. And so
okay.
I came down on a vacation. I was in third grade, and my uncle and aunt who brought me down took me to Panama City.
And yeah. I got to play Goofy Golf, and I understand that place is still there.
It's still there. I took my boys there less than a month ago.
Oh my goodness.
I think it was $10 a person to play. It's right there on the Gulf of Mexico.
Yes.
And it doesn't look any different than it was when you came down here.
Oh my goodness.
It's still pretty rustic. But
they've got the big dinosaur out there.
Oh yeah. The big dinosaur, the big tiki doll, it's really a treat. You know, it's funny how many people from Indiana come down to Northwest Florida for their vacation, and we're the closest beaches, so we treat them like family.
They
pay a lot of bills down here.
Everybody I know that I grew up with in Indiana, the place of choice was heading down to Florida. That was it, and for many, many years, it would have been the coast there near you in Tallahassee and Panama City and all of that. And then, of course, when Mickey Mouse opened up, a lot of us came down toward Orlando, too. So it's a gorgeous destination spot. I've found out that many people from Indiana love Florida, and many Floridians, when they go, they like to go to the mountains of North Carolina.
Sure.
So now I've done both sides of those treks, and I enjoy it. Jimmy Petronas, I can't tell you how much fun I've had talking to you today, and I do wish you the best, and I look forward to having you back on my program again.
You've got a friend in Jimmy. Whenever you need anything, please reach out to me. I love my social media. I love Twitter. I love Facebook. You know, I love getting my state email to my phone because I feel like I need to be responsible to all 20 million people in the state. So, people don't tell you this enough. Radio is so personal. It's so intimate. I did a while as a radio station DJ, and you know, you connect with your listeners in a way that you become part of their family. And they depend on you on their worst times, the most difficult times, during times of disaster. And, you know, radio is just a great way to hold somebody's hand through the good times and the bad. Mm. So, you know, thank you for what you do.
You're certainly welcome. That was well said, and I agree wholeheartedly. Jimmy Petronas, the CFO for the state of Florida, and I want to wish you the very best in whatever these days between now and the end of this year. I pray that you and your family and your children are just blessed by God in every way, man.
Thanks so much. God bless. Appreciate you.
All right. Thank you. And that is all of our time for today. Thank you for being here, my friends. Want to say thank you to Dave Zanotti, who you heard on the beginning of this program, also Jimmy Petronas. And we'll look forward to catching you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike on the Shepherd Radio Network.